Welcome to the Birthful Podcast. I'm Adriana Losada, and in today's episode, we're going to be talking about the postpartum period during COVID. Postpartum can be a difficult and very isolating time of life, no matter what. And that's why building your village of support ahead of time is so incredibly important. But what do you do when your village is also in isolation? How can you and your partner support yourselves and each other during these times? Perinatal relationship specialist Ellie Taylor has answers. Stay tuned. This episode of Birthful is brought to you by Ember Wave, the first bracelet that helps you feel colder or warmer at the press of a button. Get $70 off for Mother's Day by going to emberwave.com/birthful. This episode of Birthful is also brought to you by Storyworth, a fun way for you and your loved ones to collect, preserve, and pass on your stories while getting to know each other in a meaningful new way. For $10 off your first purchase, visit storyworth.com/birthful. The Birthful Podcast, talking to maternity pros and new parents to inform your intuition. Hello, hello, mighty parents and parents-to-be. Thank you for joining me for this episode of Birthful. If what you hear is helpful, you know what to do. Make sure you subscribe. It is free, and that way you will not miss a thing. To support this podcast, please support its sponsors, which for this week are Ember Wave and Storyworth. And if you are at the end of your second trimester or starting your third and looking for vital information on how to not just survive, but also, and even more so, thrive with your newborn, then go check out my online postpartum preparation classes at birthfulcourses.com. The classes are intended to help you tune in with and understand your baby, not any baby, but your baby, to set realistic expectations and also prepare for the immense identity shift that is coming your way. When you register, you get immediate access to all the materials so that you can take it at your own pace and go back to review the videos as you need after the baby arrives. Go sign up at birthfulcourses.com. Now, with all that is going on, I have been thinking a lot more about the new challenges for postpartum families. And we know that the postpartum period can be really hard. That's why I have a course. And setting up a solid village of support is key. But how do you navigate that when everyone is social distancing? That is the conundrum, isn't it? One prong would be to figure creative ways to strengthen your virtual village, and the other one is to get a better grasp on what the situation will look like for you and your partner and the emotional and communication challenges that you are both going to need to navigate. There are many ways that your friends and family can still support you, from dropping off meals to mailing you essential supplies, gift cards, or even to picking up and dropping up your laundry. Why not? And may I suggest that, in fact, during these times where people just can't come by to visit, your close friends and family can really step into the role of helpers rather than just visitors. Also, any pressures of having to entertain, get dressed, or having the house clean because you don't know who may want to stop by has been lifted. So it's not all negative. There's less FOMO if everybody's isolating. But if you need more specialized support, I'm happy to say that there are a whole bunch of postpartum professionals now providing virtual services so that new parents can still access those valuable services and support. So a shout out to all the mental health specialists, lactation consultants, postpartum doulas, sleep educators, and any other postpartum support specialists who are doing this, who are taking their services online. And if you don't know who to reach out for this, I would suggest that you first connect with your local parenting groups to see who is providing virtual services in your area. And if that isn't available, then check out the list of resources that we've been putting together at birthful.com/COVID. That's the Birthful COVID resource page. And if, by the way, you are a birth professional offering virtual services and would like to be included, then email me at info@birthful.com. Now, for the second prong, remember I said there were two prongs to this conundrum. The first one is the support. And then the second prong is, how do you and your partner support yourselves and each other through this time that is already challenging in the best of circumstances? Well, to help us with that, I am happy to be talking with perinatal relationship specialist Ellie Taylor. And Ellie also has a great resource for birth professionals that want to help new and expecting parents on what steps they can take to support their mental, emotional, and relationship well-being. It's called Seed Planting Workshop, and it is an online course, and you can find out more about that at becomingusfamily.com, or I'll put the link in the show notes. All right, let's do this. Ellie, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me, Adriana, and I love that we actually got to meet in person between our first show and this one, so I can actually picture you and feel the hug.
Me too. We got to have like a very delicious dinner out and a walk at the beach and everything. We were at a conference together. It was great.
It was. It's just so much nicer when you've actually, you know, met the person in real life, isn't it? Really nice.
So much so. And for the listeners who haven't had the privilege of meeting you in person or listened to our previous episode together, I will link it on the show notes. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Okay. Well, my background's in relationship counselling. I was a relationship counsellor and a parent educator for about 20 years now. And I always had an interest in the perinatal period, so the period of pregnancy and postpartum, because I noticed as a relationship counsellor how my husband and I were going through massive life changes and some new relationship challenges when we had our three kids. And so it's always been a passion of mine, both personally and professionally, to support the mental, emotional, and relationship well-being of expecting and new parents. That's me professionally. Personally, I'm the wife of a firefighter, the mother of three. I call them kidults now because they're teenage or young adults. We have a whole bunch of pets. I live near the beach, and I love snow skiing and hiking and reading and movies.
Yay. And that beach happens to be in Australia. I must ask, like, what is the feeling, energy, climate like right now in Australia with everything we're going through in this pandemic?
Oh, wow. That's a big question. But, you know, I guess like everywhere else, we've got some individuals that are coping quite well, some individuals that are falling apart. We've got increased rates of domestic violence, which is really worrying, increased rates of alcohol sales and probably abuse. So behind closed doors, it's pretty dire for some families. As a nation, it looks like we're actually coping really well. So we've got high testing but low infection rates. So our Prime Minister has, I guess, had the benefit of seeing how other countries which were affected early on managed the crisis. And so we're testing per capita, like quite high compared to the rest of the world. And because of that, we're able to move, I think, quite swiftly with people who are infected and likely to infect others. And then our mortality rate, thankfully, is pretty low. I think we've had 83 people pass as of this morning, which compared to other countries is, you know, awful for the families of those 83 people, but comparatively we're coping pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. It's interesting to hear what other, you know, we are so far physically removed, but we're all together in this experiencing these very strange times. And you and I were talking a little bit before we started recording on how there are a lot of overlaps between what we are experiencing as humanity right now and what a couple experiences during the postpartum period, during those first few weeks, that can be very isolating and filled with lots of emotions that take you to your edge.
Absolutely. And, you know, I was having this exact same conversation in a number of groups over the past couple of weeks, and that's that, you know, everybody, the whole world is having to deal right now with what postpartum couples have to deal with normally. You know, we are having to deal with massive life changes. We are having to deal with a complete upheaval of the work life family balance, you know, where we put our energy and our focus into. And we're having to deal with the social isolation, which we know can contribute to feelings of depression. We're, you know, as a world, it's just mind-blowing. And yet I'm really hoping that one good thing that will come from this pandemic is greater awareness of what postpartum couples are having to cope with normally, and the need to prepare or start preparing couples during pregnancy with what the postpartum period is really like. I really hope that this will result in more support, well, more preparation, ideally, more preparation during pregnancy for the postpartum period and more support postpartum for couples.
And I think usually the preparation gets focused on what things are you going to need and what, how to accommodate your house and things for the baby. It's very baby-centered. And then the next step is you're going to need a village of support. So find your village and extend that. But clearly that is not enough. And especially now in this time of pandemic, it's so hard to do because we're all isolated. So it's really hard to find that support from your village when people can't just drop by whenever, right? So what are some of those things that people need to prepare for even more when they can't rely that much on their village?
Oh, that's just so true. What you've said is just beautiful, Adriana. It's, you know, there is this massive gap in preparation. And, you know, so when the wheels do fall off, often if the wheels are going to fall off, they will fall off in the postpartum period. And, you know, that's, and so couples don't have, or parents don't have supports in place ahead of time. And yet during pregnancy, you know, we've got this months and months to set this up for couples. We've got months for couples to actually prepare for what they might need in the postpartum period. So we're really not, you know, taking advantage of this time. And it's funny because we even call it expecting. And I really think that we should call it preparing instead, you know, rather than just expecting that life begins when the baby comes. We should call it preparing, so that we're preparing for that period of time. And I think also there's just such a hyper focus on birth and on providing support for birth, which is really, really important, because birth is the beginning, I guess, in a lot of ways. But we kind of treat it like an endpoint, you know, like we kind of treat it like, okay, prepare for the birth and then off you go on your own. And I think that creates, you know, a bit of a gap for new parents. And so, and then you said too that, you know, we go from, okay, preparing for the birth to, and then getting your support system. But I guess the gap for me is how mums and dads can support themselves and also support each other through all the changes and all the challenges that we know are normal for new parents, and which we can start to prepare them for ahead of time. So I guess, you know, the things that we see that expecting a new parents need preparation and support for are things like managing their expectations of themselves, of each other, of the baby, and of life with a new baby. That's one big area. The other big area is communication and conflict. We know, for example, that 92% of parents, before the pandemic, I would say it's 110% of parents now, but we know that before the pandemic, that 92% of parents were likely to have more differences and conflict in their relationship. And so this is, again, something that we can prepare parents for ahead of time and also then provide support for afterwards. Because new differences, having to, you know, navigate, negotiate new differences in your relationship can then have a ripple effect. For a lot of parents, new conflicts can lead to increased risk for anxiety or depression, which we know can be more common during the postnatal period or the postpartum period. Mm-hmm. And then the third area is intimacy and sex. We know that, you know, having babies can create new challenges for intimacy and for a couple's sex life, for the connection generally. And again, this is something that we can prepare couples for ahead of time and help them to navigate afterwards. So they're the main three areas that I see couples needing preparation and support for, aside from, you know, the social support and the support of the village.
Yeah, and I want to get a little bit more into each of these areas just to suss out what that means for them and maybe give them some things that they can do to better prepare and be more ready for what's coming. And I also want to clarify that the reason we're focusing on the parents and preparing for postpartum for in the pandemic is that, you know, the baby, not much is going to change for the baby. Babies are just babies. They don't even know pandemic is happening, right? So they're going to have the same needs and same expectations, but it's more...
They are a beautiful distraction right now.
Right, right.
Focus on your baby and your baby's needs and, you know, it doesn't... And the world outside will just go on.
Well, and somebody recently sent me a message saying that their postpartum was wonderful because they felt they had... It almost gave them an excuse to focus exclusively on themselves and nothing else.
Yes, I'm hearing that from a lot of couples and families, and I think it's beautiful. You know, we teach nest building in Becoming Us. We teach that, you know, the postpartum time is a time of nest building, and it's where you hunker down and you focus all your attention and energy on nesting, resting, and bonding as a new family. And that's a beautiful thing to do for a month. You know, to everything else can wait. The rest of the world can wait. Your task now is to rest and nest and bond. And that's all. That's all you need to do right now. And that's, excuse me, that's the best beginning for your family anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. And usually that time, if we are very type A oriented and wanting to get things done and the checklists and have, you know, that expectation, right? You said managing expectations, that expectation that life is going to go on as it was, but just with baby is a really difficult expectation to have. And I often tell parents to think of postpartum as a really weird vacation, just because when we do vacation, we tend to be good at that, tend to be good at letting go of to-do lists and who cares if you slept in or what time of day it is. And nobody does, you know, you do your laundry and you don't cook your food. Other people do it for that. So that mental adjustment of expectations, I know that let's start with the mental adjustment of expectations, then we'll get to the how during the pandemic. But when you were talking about expectations, managing expectations about themselves, each other's, and each other, what are some of those expectations that need to be managed aside from, you know, the feeling you need to do it all?
I think the big one is that you've already alluded to is that life with a baby is about fitting the baby into your normal life. And babies don't work that way. babies don't like to be, you know, kind of fitted in. It's kind of, I tell couples, it's not about trying to get back to normal. It's about working together to create the new normal that's right for your family. And that's a big adjustment for some people because it can mean letting go of some priorities, and it can mean for some parents a new way of thinking about life. And I have to say, I think that that's a bit harder in North America, where your culture is very much about achieving and, you know, being an individual and being the best individual that you can be, and it's all about doing. Some cultures are not like that, you know, and in some cultures, this shift, I think, is easier. In Scandinavian countries, I think in Australia, it's easier. We're a little bit more relaxed. We don't place as high a value on achievement necessarily. So I think that this is particularly challenging for North American couples. So it's about being rather than doing. It's about listening to our natural rhythms and our baby's rhythms, and about adjusting our lives around the rhythms that are natural to us, whereas we can often be very disconnected from ourselves in that way. You know, like just to give you an example as a new mother, I remember being so disconnected from my own bodily sensations that I would be hungry but not eat, or I would be wanting to go to the toilet but not going to the toilet because I was so focused on meeting my baby's needs that I really lost sight of my own. I really had to get back in touch with, and I know this is true for a lot of new mums, getting back in touch with what my body was telling me and listening to those signals. And so I think our expectations have to be really in line with what's best for our new family. And that may not be at all what we thought would be best for our new family. So it's really about getting in touch with what I need to be to cope with these changes, these life changes, and what I need to be happy. And for me, that's all about connection. It's about being connected with myself as a person and about being connected with my partner and with my partner being connected with themselves.
And let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk more about that connection and working on communication and conflict. We'll be right back. Too hot, too cold, too hot again. If you're pregnant or early postpartum, you are probably having a hard time finding a comfortable temperature. So let me tell you about the Ember Wave Bracelet, which is the first bracelet that helps you feel colder or warmer at the press of a button. The Ember Wave is super easy to use. You just wear the bracelet on the inside of your wrist, and whenever you want to feel cooler or warmer, boom, you just press a button to activate it. Basically, it's like having your own personal thermostat. Just by cooling or warming the inside of your wrist, Ember Wave can help you feel better overall. The way that it does that is by stimulating your thermoreceptors, and the inside of your wrist has a particularly high density of thermoreceptors, which makes it a great spot to hack your body. I can attest that the Ember Wave actually works. It's similar to the refreshing chill you get from holding a cold glass of water or the comforting warm of holding a hot mug, but even better because since it's a bracelet you wear, you can always have it with you. The Ember Wave also comes with several different preset modes designed for common situations like when you're trying to fall asleep or having a hot flash, and you can also easily switch up your chosen temperature intensity. At emberwave.com/birthful, you can also read many testimonials of how real people are using the Ember Wave to take control of their comfort. At Ember Wave, they really take into account their users' experiences. And in fact, it was using this feedback from the Waver community that they developed their hot flash mode, which combines the lasting relief of the essential mode with the cooling intensity of the quick mode. The Ember Wave includes risk-free 30-day returns, has some payment options, and free shipping within the U.S., making it easy to try it out for yourself. Give the gift of thermal comfort this Mother's Day. Take $70 off the Ember Wave now during their site-wide sale. Go to emberwave.com/birthful to redeem this offer. That's emberwave.com/birthful for $70 off your Ember Wave. And we are back talking with Ellie Taylor about postpartum adjustments and expectations, and especially during these times of COVID. So once you've managed your expectations, I think it's a great idea to first understand what the expectations, how they need to be adjusted, and then take a step to figure out how you can do that. And I find one of the biggest challenges right now is that you have extra layers of stress and anxiety that create extra layers of unregulation. So it's really hard to figure out what you need, you know, kind of like what you were saying, you're disconnected with your own needs and not paying attention that you needed to go to the bathroom or that you needed to eat because you were so focused on your baby. I think right now people are having a hard time also being focused on the external world and the anxieties of the future, right? Future focus anxiety of how long is this going to last? How bad is it going to be? What's life going to look like in a bit? And how is that, first of all, what thoughts do you have regarding that in terms of what people can do to help address those feelings during postpartum? And then how does that affect communication and conflict with between the partners?
Okay, beautiful questions. I think the first is to recognize that anxiety during this time is absolutely normal. You know, we're all a little anxious or a lot anxious about what's going on. And anxiety is a perfectly normal human reaction to the unknown. So I think accepting that it's normal and that we're all going through it is the place to start. Anxiety, and interestingly, new parents are more at risk for anxiety anyway. So even before the pandemic, we had one in three mothers and about one in five dads having to cope with increased anxiety before the pandemic. So again, it's bringing light to an issue that new parents were having to cope with even before this crisis. Now the rest of the world is having to cope with that increased anxiety about the unknowns. But anxiety, so I guess it's accepting that anxiety is normal, maybe limiting exposure of what's going on outside that we can't control anyway. So I've actually stopped watching the news. I wasn't a big news watcher before now, but I've really limited news coverage because it's not helpful. And in some cases it's quite harmful. So limit the coverage so that it's not in your face all the time. And then knowing how to manage anxiety both in ourselves and between us and our partner. Because one of the effects of anxiety is that it creates tension, and with tension comes, you know, more potential for conflict and disagreements and arguing and that sort of thing. And that can affect the baby. You know, when we're tense, and when there's discord between us and when there's arguing between parents, that can affect babies. You know, babies can tend to be fussier and harder to settle when they're picking up those sorts of vibes. But it's also something that we can learn to manage.
Mm-hmm. So then in terms of the communication and conflict, what are some tools that they can have to figure out how to not be basically at each other's throats, right? Because when tensions run high and everything's new and you feel like maybe you have no idea what you're doing, which is kind of goes hand in hand with postpartum, it can get really hard not to just blow your top and get to that really limbic system, right? To your emotional system instead of that rational mind.
Absolutely. I think the first thing and one of the most important things to do is to not blame your partner. This pandemic is not their fault. You know, it's not their fault that the postpartum period is tough. It's not their fault, you know, that you're cooped up inside. It's not their. We tend to blame others when we're under stress and when we're in conflict. It's kind of a natural human reaction and almost part of that fight or flight to focus on the other person as the enemy and to either want to run from them or to fight them. So I think understanding that part of that limbic system response that you've just described is to want to focus on somebody else as being a threat when they're not. So we're all in this together. They are being just as stretched and challenged and having to cope with a crazy worldwide situation as we are. And I think recognizing that they're not the enemy and that it's really important for us to pull together and support each other through this rather than blame them for a situation that's completely out of their control. What we can control, however, is our own responses and reactions to stress. So, you know, we can be willing to talk things through rather than, you know, yell at our partner and call them names or blame them and That's the only thing that we've got control over, actually, in all of this, is ourselves. And that's tough when you're sleep deprived, and it's tough when you're, you know, focused on meeting your baby's needs, which is why self-care is really important. And I think the first thing that we need to address is that we're more likely to be able to not blame our partners and control our own responses if we have got self-care than if we don't.
And I think we need to clarify self-care a little bit, because it isn't necessarily, like, for a lot of people, self-care is having, even going for a regular massage, right? That's not possible right now. Or carving out the time to go out for coffee. What are some options that people have? What does self-care during pandemic, what can that look like?
It's going back to absolute basics. And so absolute basics are things like good quality nutrition. You know, if you're eating well, you're more likely to be able to cope with anything that's going on. So make sure that, you know, what you're eating has the vitamins, the nutrients, the supplements that you need, and get extra supplemental support if your diet's not good enough. The other thing that we know that's really important to being okay in any way, shape or form is sleep quality. Now, new parents are getting broken sleep, and poor sleep quality is part and parcel of the postpartum period. But there are some simple things that people can do to help improve their sleep quality. And what we want is for people to be getting, at least if they can only get 4 hours sleep at a time, that it's a good 4 hours sleep, you know, it's a solid 4 hours sleep. And so eating foods that contain tryptophan before they go to sleep can be helpful. So about half an hour before you try to get some sleep, to have, you know, like, for example, natural yogurt, honey, almonds, I think warm milk. These sorts of things can promote a better sleep quality. And then I guess the third thing that can help people to cope is exercise. Exercise is a natural antidepressant, anti-anxiety. People can exercise at home, thankfully. It's hard to do, and it's almost counterintuitive that when you're tired to not want to exercise. But exercise, we know, is good for mental and emotional health, and that's something that people can do at home. So, and encouraging partners to do the same. So if we are, you know, eating well, sleeping well, exercising as well, and resting, that's the other one, you know, giving yourself permission to rest, not using the time when the baby sleeps to clean the house, or although that can be a form of exercise too, but balancing that with rest periods. Another thing too is that can be helpful for people to cope is being creative, whatever that means for people, whether that's, you know, potting a herb garden or knitting or drawing or painting or dancing, you know, some sort of creative expression can help with coping and be a form of good self-care. So there's lots of things that people can do even when they're in their home, even when they're isolated and can't reach out to their support system, that helps them not just cope, but also, we've talked about connection before, but also stay connected to who they are. You know, like, I remember just sort of dropping everything to care for the baby. And so I let my creative side go. I stopped exercising. And I know lots of mothers do that too. And yet doing those things is a really nice way for us to stay connected to the woman that we are, kind of a side of being, and I'm doing air quotes now, just a mother. The postpartum period is kind of really unique for people and couples in determining, I guess, how the next couple of years are going to play out in terms of issues like our self-esteem and our sense of identity and how our relationship is going to be shaped going forward, and then how our family is going to be going forward too. That's a massive answer to your very simple question, but I guess self-care is the crux of a whole bunch of things that might not be on people's radars now, but that can play out over the next few years going forward.
And I love that answer, because it has you go back to basics. And I find that when you approach that self-care or that tuning into what your needs are with curiosity, one of the things that I've been experiencing during the pandemic is that usually my go-to movement is yoga. So that's what I love to do at least once a week and get stretches here and there. And then for the past week and a half, I've found that I have not wanted to do any yoga whatsoever because my body was asking for more, for a bigger release of stress hormones, right? Where yoga is very relaxing. I found I needed more sort of liberation than what yoga could give me. So I started doing dance videos and dance exercises and teasing my daughter and, you know, started learning some TikTok dances. But if I realized that what I wanted was to move with more energy than what yoga was giving me, and I guess less structure, right? More free will. So that's been a nice introspection and revelation for me of my body wanting to move, but in a different way than what I usually give it.
Which goes back to the effect of stress on the body. So one of the things that we are primed to do, for example, when we're having an argument with our partner, you know, the anger comes up and our body is primed to move. You know, the energy, there's this rush of energy through our body that makes us want to flee or want to fight. So recognizing that one of the effects of stress is increased risk for conflict, which means that we've got all these stress hormones now, you know, like flowing through our bodies, we'll want to get it out. And exercise is a great way to do that, which is why it's also an anti-anxiety, you know, approach. So exercise is a great way to get out frustration and irritation and annoyance and anger. If we do that on a regular basis, it's less likely to build up in our bodies and become a trigger down the track that our poor dear partners are likely to set off. So if I'm exercising regularly, you know, and I don't know if it's the case for you in the States, but we are able to exercise here still. So we're able to go for a run, we're able to go for a swim, you know, we are part of our social distancing and self-isolation is that we are allowed, I'm doing air quotes, once a day to go out. We are seeing more couples with new babies out together than ever before, and it's absolutely beautiful to see. Is that possible there?
It is, and I had recently a friend who very much goes to exercise for self-care and was having a hard time with not having the face-to-face or physical contact with her sister, who also just recently had a baby. And I said, well, how far do you live from each other? Like, you can drive, and she said 10 minutes, you can drive over, and then you guys can together, social distancing, right? Take a walk 6 feet apart and converse and seeing your babies and hearing your babies. You know, there's a middle of the road. And I guess that leads to my next question is, what are some ways that parents can make sure they are supported by their village at this time where that village is isolating as well? Usually it's only the new family that's isolated, but now we're all isolated. Let's take a quick break first, actually, and we'll come back to that question. We'll be right back. My mom lives thousands of miles away, so figuring out a Mother's Day gift for her is not the simplest. This year, though, I decided to give her a StoryWorth subscription a few weeks early, and she has been loving it. Every week, StoryWorth sends her a different writing prompt with questions like, what was your mom like when you were a child? Or what have been some of your life's greatest surprises? And if at any point she doesn't like the prompt or would rather write about something else, any of us can easily edit the questions for her, or she can edit them herself. When I asked my mom about how she was enjoying the experience, she said she's loved taking the time to sit down and think about these things. She hadn't realized how much she remembers from her interactions as a child, and it's been wonderful thinking about people and places she hasn't thought about in ages. Not to mention how much I've been enjoying reading about her life and learning, for example, how my grandmother would drop everything at 6 p.m. every day to get herself ready for when my grandfather would come home from work, and how her parents would take walks every day after dinner. And honestly, the process has given us more things to talk about on the phone that go way beyond the latest COVID update. You can decide how often your mom gets a story prompt from StoryWorth, and after a year, StoryWorth will compile all her answers and photos that she's included into a beautiful keepsake book that's shipped for free within the US. And of course, you have the option of editing the stories as much as you want before the book gets printed. Give your mom the most meaningful gift this year with StoryWorth. Get started right away without the need for shipping by going to storyworth.com/birthful. You'll get $10 off your first purchase. That's storyworth.com/birthful for $10 off. And we are back. So I left that cliffhanger of a question. What are some ways that parents can make sure they are supported by their village at this time that their village is also isolating?
Sure. Okay. So there's a couple of ways. Before the break, we were talking about going for a walk. So, you know, if you can go for a walk, you know, in your local area, now's the time to do it. I think to go for a daily walk with the baby as a couple, I would walk to your local park where you might find that there's other couples that are doing exactly the same thing, and you can start up a conversation from, you know, a safe distance, that this is a place that you could continue to meet after the crisis is over. And you might find that there's, you know, five other couples with babies that live in your neighbourhood that you've never met that are keen to continue meeting up once the crisis is over. I think other things that couples can do is to help take the stress of trying to do too much other stuff off, especially if they've got a new baby. You know, you can ask friends or relatives that live in the local area to drop, you know, maybe to drop some food around, so that at least you don't have to do the meal prep, and that can take a little bit of stress and time off that you can spend doing more relaxing or enjoyable things. The virtual village has never been more important, and you know, I know that parents are getting a lot of emotional support from Facebook groups, listservs, or, you know, email lists, or whatever. And I know a lot of parents that are having regular Zoom catch-ups also with friends and family, which is really nice. You know, I've got three girlfriends. We've all known each other from school, and we try and get together once a month for dinner. Now we're doing it over Zoom, and our families can be involved in it too. So, you know, my girlfriends are seeing my kids, and one of us got a new puppy that we got to all see. So there's a number of ways that people can stay connected, and face to face via, you know, different social conferencing platforms, that I really encourage people to try, because they can then be added ways of having support once the face to face, the normal stuff of being able to have a hug and a high five has resumed. You know, really open up to the possibility that support doesn't necessarily have to be face-to-face. That's obviously the best way, but it's certainly not the only way.
Absolutely. And I think we are all having to get really creative with what we are doing. But I love the idea that going for a walk can connect you even from afar with other people in your neighborhood with whom you can then continue a relationship as things expand. And I've also been really encouraged about all the creativity of the traditional support professionals, like mental health counselors or breastfeeding cafes, or and by that I mean like breastfeeding groups or postpartum doulas, where they've moved those support groups online so that you can still reach out, and it's not the same, but you can still reach out and connect with the village around you locally, that will then afterwards, once we get past being in shutdown or in lockdown, we can once again connect face to face.
Yeah, absolutely. I just, it's Anzac Day here recently for us. So that's our day where we honour people that have fallen in the wars. And normally it would be a public march and everybody would go to the pub. And instead of going to the public local war memorial for a dawn service where everybody would gather together, they invited us to stand in our doorways or in our driveways, or, you know, on the street, and hold candles. And so all our neighbours were lined up in the street holding candles, and a number of people in the neighbourhood either could play the last post on the trumpet or had a recording of it. And it was such a still morning, and you could hear the different you know, pieces of music being played in different parts of the neighbourhood, and the neighbours just standing there holding candles. It was absolutely beautiful. And I think that that's going to be a new tradition going forward for people who don't want to, you know, get up at 6 o'clock in the morning or 5 o'clock in the morning and go to the dawn service at their local park. And, you know, we got to meet new neighbours after that. We, you know, there would be now conversations across the street with neighbours that we really hadn't spoken to before. And, you know, even though we have social distancing, I'm finding that I'm now making an extra effort to make eye contact with people and say hi and good morning when I go for a walk that I wouldn't necessarily have done otherwise. So, you know, there could be some really rich things coming out of this. And that's something that I advise new parents to do anyway, is to make friends with the people in your neighbourhood, because these people potentially are going to be supports for your child as they grow up.
And I found that that's a really great point of reaching out, even though people have masks, like reaching out, meaning of saying hello. I've found that when I've gone to the supermarket, now that we're all wearing masks, the feeling is one of anxiety and fear, but how that mask has created a barrier where if you're going to talk to somebody, you can feel them like recoil, right? Like, don't get any close to me. And I think it's important for us to continue to connect, even smiling with your eyes, waving, saying hi, just nodding, bringing those little connections back when you do go out, because we can't just let the fear take over. We've got to switch it around.
And we do have control over that. That's another beautiful example of something that we do have control over. You know, there's so much that we don't have control over, but we absolutely have control over whether we smile at somebody because it comes through in our eyes, even if they can't see out, you know, our face, and whether we say hi. And, you know, I've been having conversations with people in the bread line. You know, we're all lined up, you know, a meter and a half apart, but I'm just saying, how are you going? How are you coping with all of this? And had some really lovely conversations with people.
Mm. You were interviewed for a fabulous article that I'm going to link on the show notes about how to avoid parental burnout during isolation. And I want to bring that up because I know I have quite a lot many listeners who have little children, might be pregnant right now, but also have, you know, more than one, and suddenly find themselves everybody at home together 24/7. And so then I'm hearing a lot about parental burnout. What causes parental burnout and what does that look like?
So I think we're all experiencing to some degree or another because of the situation at the moment. So parental burnout, I think, was really common before now, and it's partly a result of expectations and just trying to do, you know, way too much with not enough support even before the crisis, but certainly during the crisis now. So normally, you know, we get a break from whatever responsibilities we've got. We get a break from those responsibilities. And so, you know, that's how we've been able to avoid burnout before now. We're working, we can come home from work, or where we're parenting, we can, you know, tag team with our partner or you know, go out with friends and have some time out. But people are finding it really hard to carve time out now, and so the stress is constant, and when stress is constant and too much, we will become burnt out. The effects are mental, emotional and relational. You know, mentally we can have trouble concentrating, we can't think straight, we can't make decisions. Our memory is affected. Emotionally, we tend to be more up and down. We tend to have mood swings. We tend to get more irritable and angrier, have a shorter fuse. Relationship-wise, it's likely to end, you know, contribute to more of the arguments and disagreements that we've spoken about. So it is real, and it is something to be managed. And anxiety can feed into burnout. So anxiety is a big part of it as well.
So what are some things that people can do to minimize the burnout and or to recover from burnout?
So a lot of the self-care things that we've spoken about are really key. You know, so again, the good nutrition, the sleep quality, the taking a rest, the being creative. People who can compartmentalize tend to cope with burnout a little bit better. So people who can kind of switch off one thing and turn their attention to something else tend to be able to carve out a bit more of a break. So if you can't do that, just, you know, force yourself to do it. You know, like if you're force yourself to take a break. Time it if you have to. You know, like, I'm going to do this for an hour and then I'm going to have a break and I'm going to tell everybody, my partner, that I'm having a break, or, you know, whatever. And plan for it. You know, plan to have breaks throughout the day and do something that feeds your soul. You know, do a yoga class, do a meditation. You know, go out and sit in the yard if you've got one, sit in the sunshine, have a cup of tea. Vitamin D is actually really important to help alleviate depression. So, you know, having a morning cup of tea in the sun is, again, a simple thing that we do have complete control over that can potentially make a big difference. And then there's the couple care stuff. And the couple care stuff means, you know, not taking things personally, not blaming your partner for everything, even though it's easy to do. And supporting your partner to do the self-care stuff too. You know, supporting them in eating well and exercising and paying attention to sleep quality. Oh, another thing for sleep quality too, no screens in bed. That's another simple thing that can make a big difference that we've got control over. Having screens in bed at nighttime can stimulate the brain, and that's going to affect sleep quality.
Mm. What are some other things that people can do to support each other during these times? And I know we were talking a little bit about I statements earlier on before we started recording.
Okay, so a really key thing for parents to pay attention to is the way that they relate to their partner. You know, for example, if you start a conversation with a you should, you have to, you never, or you don't, you're pretty much guaranteed that the other partner is going to either switch off or become defensive before you've even uttered another word. So you statements are, I guess, an invitation for conflict, and yet they're so common. You know, so many of us use them. I mean, I'm supposedly a relationship expert, and yet I still find myself falling into that particular bad habit with my dear husband. So what we do to get around using you statements, which really do trigger conflict, is using what we use, I statements or I messages or I language. And that's taking responsibility for ourselves rather than blaming our partner. So, for example, instead of you never listen to me, you never hear what I'm saying, you don't pay attention, it would be something like, I would really like for you to hear what I'm going to say because our relationship is important to me. And so what I'd like you to know is that, and then, you know, whatever the issue is, and what I'd really like for us to do is to, and then come up with the solution that fits the, you know, or the desire or the need that fits the situation. It's a really tricky skill. It's a skill that can feel really awkward at the beginning, and often that awkwardness can mean that things backfire because it's awkward for both the speaker and the listener to do. But I find that once you keep doing it and you become used to it, both it's easier for the person who's speaking that way and for the partner who's listening, and it becomes a lot more natural, and then it becomes a lot more normal for conversations to be structured around I messages or I statements. And that has a massive reduction on conflict. It also increases the ability for your partner to hear you and to respond in a positive way to whatever the request is, because with you statements, the request gets lost because the conflict just takes over. It's also a really great way of managing misunderstandings. Misunderstandings, we know from, there's a particular piece of research that misunderstandings are very common during the postpartum period, and that a woman feeling misunderstood by her partner can increase her risk for postnatal depression. So as much as possible, we want to minimize risks for misunderstandings, and using I messages is a really great way of being very clear and intentional about anything, really. Mm. It's a really, really important skill for ideally expecting parents to learn, and when they've got all that time to practice it before the baby comes, but also a great way to support new parents too.
Yes, and especially because it's very easy during the postpartum period to for your needs as a new mom to get lost, right? Because it's that season of sacrifice, if you will, where you're not putting yourself first, which you should, but you don't. And so if you're not expressing your needs, they will not get met. And I have found with the I statements that it is like you need to try it out because they work fantastically in terms of having yourself be heard and your needs be heard. And also because it switches that, what you were saying, the thing about blame, it switches the angle from blaming somebody else to taking it's a mindful look, an introspective look at what you need and how you're feeling. So you're connecting with what's happening inside of you. And recently I heard on another podcast, David Kessler mentioned judgment demands punishment. And what I find that when we do all the you never, you this, what we're doing is judging. And then if we're judging, then there needs to be a punishment. Right? Either you punish yourself or punish your partner. And I statements are beautiful at flipping that conversation. And the more you do them, then the more then you realize when you are also out of line and are paying more attention to how you feel and how others feel, so you're more empathetic. I found, I think it was a couple of days ago, we've gotten pretty good with I statements between my husband and I, but I found that we were getting more on each other's nerves lately, and I just with a joke, I just voiced it. I said, "Are we sick of each other yet?" And we both had a good laugh. We both had a good laugh, but it was just that in a just acknowledging that it's a little more tense right now than usual. What are we going to do about this?
Yeah, it all goes back to awareness, doesn't it? It really all goes back to awareness. And it's funny that you said the season of sacrifice. That's the first time I've heard that term. And I guess with the work that I do with Becoming Us and our facilitators is to frame it up so that this period of time is really a period of discovery, and not about sacrifice at all, but about equipping partners to meet the needs of mums who are in a position where they're giving out so much and really needing to get back more in order to keep giving out. So I guess the big difference for us in the work that we do is resourcing and supporting dads and partners to be able to come in and meet the needs of mums, so that she's not doing it all alone, and so that she doesn't get burnt out, and so that that time is not just about, meeting the baby's needs, but about raising awareness with both partners about what they need to be happy and healthy, because that's the foundation for their family going forward.
And I absolutely love that. And that's how what we all should be doing. I mean, I'd say season of sacrifice just because that's how it tends to be viewed,
Yeah,
right? And that and it is a problem.
and it's a problem. Yeah.
Yeah. And it goes both ways. It's equip the partners to support the birthing person on how to recharge and have their needs met. But the birthing person also needs to say, these are my needs, and recognize them and not go, because it is a time when, just biologically, especially if you're breastfeeding, you're being asked, more is being asked from you. And it's easy to say, well, you can't do it, I'll do it, right?
Yeah, which goes back to expectations where we started, and that's, you don't know how you're going to feel, and you don't know how needy your baby is going to be until you've got them. So, it's you can't expect life to go back to normal and have a new baby. It's just not possible. And where we've got couples trying to do that, they're really setting themselves up for failure. It's really about tuning into your baby, becoming aware, and and used to what they need, but then also what you need, as a mum to cope with meeting your baby's needs, and then what you need from your partner for you to cope with meeting your baby's needs.
And understanding that it's a long game. It goes on for a long time. So you have to, it has to be sustainable. You can't just be giving and giving and giving, because
it has to be, just as an example, most parents aren't aware that babies' peak unsettled time is actually about 6 to 8 weeks. So it's not even in the first month postpartum. It's, you know, close to the second end of the second month postpartum. So, you know, so many couples just plan for the first, you know, maybe 4 weeks, maybe 6 weeks, but actually it can get really challenging in the month after that.
Oh, definitely. And then at 3 months, then their babies are learning new things and discovering the world. And you think, oh, by 3 months, and that's when it gets even 3, 4, 5 extra spicy.
Yeah. And then things change all again.
Yeah. And when they're 15 years old, I'm not kidding. Not joking.
Why the postpartum period is so crucial for parents and partners to be open to making some fundamental changes with how they do life. You know, some really going back to basics, foundation building stuff with how they do their self-care, their relationship care, and their life, because you're laying foundations that are going to support you for the next 15 years. You know, potentially, this is what couples don't realize, but this is what professionals could be working with couples ahead of time. This is what we could be using the prenatal period, the, you know, pregnancy for, to equip couples with this knowledge and the skills that go with it to start doing the really fundamental foundation building stuff that's going to see them through not just the next couple of weeks or months, but years and potentially decades. You know,
absolutely.
This is the work that could be.
Oh, yeah, agreed 100%. And so I think basically our summary is, during these postpartum times of COVID, you have to dig even deeper into the preparation of your expectations and communication and relationship building for, like you said, set down those fundamental relationship changes for your new life forever, especially if it's going to take more creativity to bring in your village to support you. So you have to lean in deeper to building that huge connection between the two of you.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You just put it.
All of that to say, people, you just need to connect with each other more. No.
And be honest. And I think honesty is a really big part of this. You know, if you're not coping, be honest with yourself that you're not coping, and be honest with your partner that you're not coping, and be honest about saying, you know, I need your help to make this work. You know, I need, and using the I language, to be honest about what you need. And I always get people to practice with themselves, the I statements with themselves, to just check in with themselves that what's going to come out of their mouth is really what they want to say, and have those really important conversations with themselves before they share it with their partner or with somebody else. Because that whole reactivity, you know, that whole fight, flight response that we spoke about at the beginning, you know, the whole limbic system is the opposite of that. And to turn that, you know, automatic reaction off, it's about having those honest conversations with ourselves and what do we really want, and starting there instead.
Mm-hmm. Checking in with your body, checking in with your feeling, to say your I statement, and then communicate that.
Taking the time, taking it slow, taking some deep breaths, you know, all the stuff that we know that we should be doing but not necessarily why we should be doing it is the place to start.
Mm. Love it. Ellie, was there anything that you wanted to make sure we said that we didn't get to?
I don't think so, except that, you know, it's often during times of crisis or challenge where people really get to know themselves and what they're capable of. And I guess I would just ask your listeners to think of this as an opportunity to do just that, to really tune in to you and what you need to be happy and healthy, and to start to make steps to put those things in place, and to also be curious about what your partner needs to be happy and healthy, and how you can make steps towards each other to create that new normal that we're all having to cope with right now.
Yay. And if people want to know more of what you do, of your programs, how can they connect with you? What are you up to?
I guess Becoming Us family website is the best place to start. That's kind of where we are and who I am and what we're doing. So it's www.becomingusfamily.com. What I'm doing is I've just created a new professional training for birth professionals to help prepare parents during pregnancy for all of the stuff that we've just spoken about. So if there's any professionals who are listening, I'd love them to check it out.
And what in the program, they can find it at becomingusfamily.com.
Yes, absolutely. And if parents want to get more, there's a book, Becoming Us, Couple's Guide to Surviving Parenthood and Growing a Family That Thrives. And I would love them to be able to access that too.
And it is a fantastic book. I'll link in the show notes also the episode we did a couple of years ago when the book first came out, or close to that we go through like the tenets of the book in terms of relationship building, which are fantastic and fabulous. And the seasons, right? My words are not as great as you would describe them.
The book, I think, since we spoke last. So it's a new book, and it only came out in the middle of last year. It's all about the journey that the couples go through from pregnancy and through the first few years of early parenthood and how to navigate that journey. So the steps or the stages are the same as the previous book, but it's a bit more of a bit more of a ride, this one.
It's the updated version. Fantastic. Very good. We'll link to that in the show notes as well. Thank you so much, Ellie. It's always such a delight to talk with you.
Oh, my pleasure, Adriana. I'm missing you. I'm missing all my US friends. I was supposed to be coming in June, July to do a workshop tour that I did the previous couple of years and to be at a conference, but that looks like that's not going to happen, sadly. So I don't know when I'll get there next, but I love it there and I love all my friends there. And I'm thinking of you. You're in our news when I watch it, not necessarily every night, but when I do watch it, you're right up there in our news. So I know that there's lots of people that are struggling there, but I want them to know that there's hope and that there's help, and please reach out for it.
Mighty One, find the in-depth show notes for this episode at birthful.com, where you can also learn more about me, the show, send me messages and more. And if you're looking to get ready for life with a newborn, as well as understand the deep identity changes that are coming your way, then go to birthfulcourses.com and sign up for my Thrive With Your Newborn online postpartum preparation classes. You want to take this class before your baby arrives, so go sign up at birthfulcourses.com right now and let's get you postpartum ready. This episode was produced by me and made possible by you, the amazing Birthful patrons, and the wonderful people at Ember Wave and Storyworth. For $70 off your Ember Wave bracelet, go to emberwave.com/birthful and go to storyworth.com/birthful for $10 off your first purchase. The title song for this podcast is Vive Ace by Kevin McLeod, and the sponsorship song is Air Hockey Saloon by Chris Zabriskie. Find them both at freemusicarchive.org. Oh, and Ellie was super amused when I asked her what she had for breakfast.
I had porridge or oats, I guess. Do you call it porridge in the US? Oatmeal. Okay, so I had oatmeal with banana, sultanas, and just a little bit of brown sugar.
I also learned that a sultana is a variety of raisin. I'm Adriana Lozada. Please join me next week when I'll be talking to another maternity pro to inform your intuition here at the Birthful Podcast. Thanks so very much for listening. This episode is copyright 2020 by Adriana Lozada.